Before I begin, you should know that this episode mentions suicide. If you or someone you know is considering suicide, call or text 988. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available 24/7. If you need to skip today's episode, I have included several of John O'Donohue's blessings for you at the end of the written transcript. Take care, and I hope you will tune in again next week. Out of respect, names have been changed in this episode. Mercy moments. Our lives are dripping with mercy. Indeed, our world is drenched in it. There are many things that can only be seen through eyes that have cried. Saint Oscar Romero. Where's your passion for social justice come from? Like, what motivates you to work for justice? A fellow teacher asked Billy, a high school senior, as we gathered in a booth awaiting our Waffle House breakfast. The bus filled with students from several Jesuit institutions in Ohio had made an early morning stop on our way to Columbus, Georgia, or more specifically, Fort Benning, home to what had formerly been known as the School of the Americas, or the SOA. Billy was an active member of the Justice League, our school's Peace and Justice Club, which meant he had participated in many a protest, social justice conference, immersion trip, and weekly visit with people living on the streets of our city. His involvement was distinguished among his peers, who often seemed to be building their college resumes with every club they joined. If other students were calculated, or perhaps just oblivious, Billy was sincere. Quirky, nerdy even, smart for sure, disarming, funny, kind, but mostly sincere. So we asked him why he did what he did. I don't know, the gospel? His quick retort signified the question wasn't necessary when the answer was obvious. I smiled. It was no surprise he had once again joined us on the road to Georgia. For decades, the SOA had trained soldiers and high-ranking military officials from all over Latin America in counterinsurgency tactics. But instead of spreading democracy throughout the continent, when left to their own devices, the SOA graduates would return to their home countries to carry out some of the most egregious human rights violations, assassinations, and massacres in recent history. During the 1980s, they were responsible for the deaths of Saint Oscar Romero, four U.S. churchwomen in El Salvador, and six Jesuit priests who had taught and worked at the university in San Salvador, their housekeeper and her daughter. All of these people had one thing in common. They were guilty of speaking out on behalf of the rights of those who were poor and oppressed. In 1990, the year after the Jesuits were killed in El Salvador, a Marinole priest began a vigil to remember the people who had died at the hands of SOA graduates and to protest the training that had continued on U.S. soil. 20 years later, we brought students to what had become an annual vigil, which included a call and response. Cantors would sing the names and ages of the countless victims, and thousands of protesters would respond singing Presente as we raised white crosses in the air and processed in front of the military base. They were present. The victims remained with us. Their experiences of injustice and their spirit for justice remained the driving forces behind the protest. Oscar Romero, 62 years old, presente. Dorothy Kazel, 41 years old, presente. Unknown child, 3 years old, presente. The chant would continue for hours. As the procession approached Fort Benning's entrance, Billy knelt before the gates, took out a rosary, and began to pray all on his own. There was no announcement, no pleading for a friend to accompany him. Amid the sea of protesters, he knelt and prayed. Billy, that was quite the photo opportunity. People wouldn't stop taking your picture, I joked with him later that day. I know, they were exploiting my sincerity. I agreed. Perhaps they were. Or perhaps it was an attempt at capturing a glimpse of what Celtic spirituality refers to as a thin place. A place where the veil that separates heaven and earth fades. Or, as the psalmist promises, a space where kindness and truth meet, where justice and peace kiss. A little over a year later, I found myself wishing I had taken a picture of Billy kneeling at the gates. A friend and fellow teacher called me when I was on retreat with students to let me know Billy had ended his life. A Jesuit priest, Jim, who had known and therefore had loved Billy, was on retreat with me. The next day, he left the retreat center briefly to visit Billy's family. Upon his return, he shared with me, "I don't think I've ever seen grief quite like it. His mother is in such visible pain." That Saturday, I went to Billy's funeral before driving 2 hours to arrive late to a friend's bridal shower in my hometown. Kara's celebration was beautiful. She was embraced by so much joy, a stark contrast to the devastation that had swallowed the community gathered to grieve just hours earlier. The shower was everything it should be. We visited, we laughed, we ate, we celebrated. Afterwards, I went back to my parents' house to rest before I drove home, and I again wept for Billy. On the same day, the same moment even, there was infinite joy and overwhelming loss. A thin place. And God was in it all. And that is not to put a positive spin on a tragedy. I'm not going to share the lessons learned from such devastation. If there were any, that's certainly not my place. But God isn't only present in the perfectly curated moments we share on social media. God is present with us in the excruciatingly unbearable moments too. God remains. When Jim commented on the visible anguish of Billy's mother, he recognized the face of God in her. What would happen if we prayed with that icon, the image of God as a mother weeping? What if this prayer could lead us to recognize God in all those who are suffering in our world? We often pray for God to be with those who are suffering or in need, but what if we prayed recognizing that God is already and always will be with those who are suffering? How might this change our understanding of the world, our understanding of God? How might this invite us into proximity with those who are suffering? God's already there. Are we the ones who need to journey to be present with those who are poor, oppressed, grieving, suffering? Remembering that the face of God is not only reflected in the beauty of creation and the joy of the resurrection. During Lent, as we meditate on Christ's passion and death, we especially remember that God knows suffering and that God relates to us in our own suffering. God is in it all. Billy knew that. That's how he was able to find a moment of serenity, a thin place, in front of the gates of Fort Benning, flanked by armed guards and barbed wire. That's also why I know he has found endless moments of peace with the God who has welcomed him and all victims of violence home, and who continues to weep with his mother and all mothers. Billy, 19 years old, presente.